Hey, this is Greg Little from Bethany Baptist Church. I'm so thankful that you decided to join us on this podcast. I trust that the Lord will use it in your life to encourage you, strengthen you, and challenge you wherever you are in your walk with Him. For more information about Bethany, you can visit us online at bethanybc.ca. And now let's open our hearts and minds to what the Lord has for us. All right, let's take our Bibles and turn to Matthew chapter 19. We are just going through Matthew at a blistering pace now. It's only message number 80, so we still have a long ways to go. But we're in Matthew 19. We're going to start reading in verse number 1 and read down to verse number 12 of this passage, Matthew chapter 19. Starting in verse 1. And it came to pass that when Jesus had finished these sayings, that's everything that he said over the last couple of weeks to the disciples and to the crowds in chapter number 18, that he departed from Galilee and came into the coast of Judea beyond Jordan. And great multitudes followed him, and he healed them there. The Pharisees also came unto him, tempting him and saying unto him, "Is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for every cause?" And he answered and said unto them, "Have ye not read that he which made them at the beginning made them male and female? And said, For this cause shall a man leave father and mother, and shall cleave to his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh? Wherefore, they are no more twain, but one flesh. What therefore God hath joined together, let not man put asunder." They say unto him, "Why did Moses then command to give a writing of divorcement to put her away?" He saith unto them, "Moses, because of the hardness of your hearts, suffered you to put away your wives. But from the beginning it was not so. And I say unto you, whosoever shall put away his wife, except it be for fornication, and shall marry another, committeth adultery. And whoso marrieth her which is put away doth commit adultery." His disciples say unto him, "If the case of the man be so with his wife, it is not good to marry." But he said unto them, "All men cannot receive this saying, save they to whom it is given. For there are some eunuchs which were so born from their mother's womb, and there are some eunuchs which were made eunuchs of men, and there be eunuchs which have made themselves eunuchs for the kingdom of heaven's sake. He that is able to receive it, let him receive it." We'll stop our reading there. And look at this passage. I looked up some statistics this week, kind of in preparation for this sermon, some statistics in our country specifically on marriage and divorce. And I was actually a little surprised because I found that divorce rates are actually going down fairly significantly in our country. But I think the reason, there's a lot of reasons for that, a lot of different things that contribute to that. I think the main thing, though, that contributes to that is people are just not getting married anymore. Common law has become altogether common. People are living together, but marriage is not for them. And so divorce rates are going down, mostly because people are just not getting married at the same rate. But according to these statistics that I looked at, there were some just over 45,000 divorces in Canada last year. And according to, again, what I was reading, the average relationship in Canada, the marriage relationship, lasts about 15 years, and up to and around 40% of all marriages end in divorce. That's a pretty high number. 40% of all marriages lasting. In fact, it's interesting that according to the study, that millennials are some of the ones that at least as of right now are staying together longer than some of the other generations before them, that they're lasting a little longer than 15 years. But yet, 40% of all of these marriages end in divorce, almost half. Now, what's amazing about these statistics is that when you look at the reasons for divorce, the reason for separation, 95% of divorces, 95% of these separations in marriage were because they were considered no-fault cases. In other words, there wasn't a specific adultery. There wasn't a specific action that led to divorce. It's simply that they just no longer found each other compatible after a number, certain number of years, that they just didn't. They tried to work it out. It didn't seem to work. There was maybe money issues or family issues or conflict in some way. There's many reasons for that, but 95% of divorces were no-fault divorces. Now, those numbers that I gave you, they might not shock you this morning because they're pretty well known. I mean, we know that that's what's going on in society around us. Ever since the Divorce Act was passed in 1968, These cases of divorce have just skyrocketed. And now they're coming down a little bit for all of those reasons. But we see the effects of that all around us. And I say all that to say this, the culture that Jesus is speaking into in first century Israel was actually a very similar culture. Now, I don't know the statistics of marriage and divorce back then in that day and age, but I do know that it's something that was practiced and practiced fairly often. This bill of divorce that is spoken of here that Moses gave was something that was common. It was something that was very easy to obtain. It was very easy to do. And we're going to look into that this morning and take a look at marriage and divorce from a biblical perspective and see how this contrasts so much with what we often see in the world around us today. So, as we come into Matthew chapter 19, Jesus is again moving on. He's finished his ministry up in Capernaum, Galilee, the Galilee area. I don't know if you can see that very well. Galilee is right up around here at the top. Capernaum, all of that. That's where he spent most of his ministry to this point. Now he's traveling. He's on his way to Jerusalem with his disciples. He'll get there very soon. But he's traveling down, he's somewhere over here on the other side of the Jordan this morning. So he's traveled quite a bit of distance. He's heading down to Jerusalem. And as he's heading down that way, as so often happens, the multitudes hear of him, they see him, they follow him, they go after him. And Jesus spends time, again, as he's so often done up to this point, just healing and helping people. That's what we see in verse number two. Jesus is there in that place and the multitudes come and he heals them there. And he's there. And as he's healing people, still reaching people, the Pharisees come to him with a question. And like always, when the Pharisees come with a question, their desire is not to get an answer to that question. They come with a question with the desire to trap Jesus in that question, to trick him into saying something wrong or siding with the wrong people. They're trying to actually set him against another group of people. So they come and they ask this question, and his question is the same way. They're tempting Jesus, trying him, trying to trick him. And so notice, first of all, there's the question of divorce. All right, the Pharisees come in verse number 3, and they come tempting him and saying unto him, is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for every cause? Now, this question sets the stage for this whole passage here this morning. The Pharisees say, is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for every cause? In other words, is it lawful, Jesus, for a man to divorce his wife on any grounds at all? In fact, you could translate it this way. Is it lawful for a man, is it fine for a man to divorce his wife for whatever reason, whatever time, whatever grounds? Is he able to divorce her for whatever he wants? Any reason you can think of? That's the question they ask. We need a little bit of context to that question. There were really two main schools of thought among the Jewish rabbis of the day, specifically when it comes to this idea of divorce, to the bill of divorcement that Moses gave, and we'll look at that in just a little bit. But there's really two sides in rabbinical thought. One side, who followed the rabbinical school of Shammai, came to this conclusion that divorce was only acceptable in the case of adultery. That there was no other reason, that the only cause that justified divorce was adultery. And that would be allowed in those cases. They were the more conservative side. The other side, who followed the rabbinical school of Hillel, came to this conclusion when it came to the bill of divorce given by Moses, that it was reason, it was a means to separate for any reason at all. Any reason specifically. They interpreted Moses' bill of divorce as a freedom to divorce when your wife no longer finds favor in your sight. And you can interpret that any way you want. So if my wife, literally, this is what they said, if my wife burns my meal, she no longer has favor in my sight and I'm okay to divorce her. Or if I find someone that I find more attractive than my wife, then she no longer has favor in my eyes and I can divorce her and find somebody else. That's how they interpreted this bill of divorcement. For whatever reason, for any cause, the man was able to divorce his wife. And this is the society that Jesus is speaking into. This is something that was very common in that day and age. And what the Pharisees are doing is they're trying, by asking this question, they're trying to get Jesus into one of these camps. Jesus, who do you side with? Do you side with Shammai and his followers? Or do you side with Hillel and his followers? But either way, whoever he sides with, he's going to anger the other side. Right? This is their question. And it's amazing how many times the Pharisees think they've got Jesus up against the wall. I'll ask him this question. He'll have no idea how to answer. Even if he answers in one way, the other side's going to be angry at him, so on. And they're trying to cause this division between Jesus and the people. So again, they didn't really want an answer on divorce. That was not their intent. Their intent was to trick Jesus and trap him in this. All right, so there's the question of divorce, but I want you to see, secondly, God's design for marriage. Jesus says this in verse 4. I love how he responds. He answered and said to them, "Have ye not read?" Don't you know what the Bible says? Now, these were scholars that he was talking to. They knew the Bible inside and out. They knew the Old Testament. And Jesus says, haven't you read? Don't you know that he which made them at the beginning made them male and female and said, for this cause shall a man leave father and mother and shall cleave to his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh. Wherefore, they are no more twain, but one flesh. What therefore God hath joined together, let not man put asunder. I love how Jesus doesn't take sides in this question. He doesn't agree with one side or another. He doesn't even answer the question directly. What he does is he refers back to the very beginning and simply states what God's design, what God's intent was for marriage. How God intended it to be. By the way, he refers back to the beginning. It was true. What God designed for marriage was true when he created it. It was true when Jesus spoke into it here in Matthew 19. And it's still true today. God's design for marriage has not changed in all of the years. In a society that is so confused about marriage and apathetic towards marriage, increasingly so. And in a society that is actually antagonistic towards God's idea of marriage and desires to tear it down and redefine it and change it to be what they desire it to be, it's good for us in this society to go back to the beginning and see, what did God design for marriage to be? What was God's intention? Because that hasn't changed. Couple of thoughts that Jesus gives here about God's intention for marriage. Notice, first of all, the characteristics of marriage. What was God's intention? What was God's design when he established the institution of marriage? Notice, first of all, that it is divinely appointed. It is divinely appointed. That is, that God is the one that designed it. Have you not read that he which made them at the beginning, made them male and female, and said, for this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, down in verse 6, what therefore God hath joined together, let no man tear asunder. Jesus reminds the Pharisees where this design came from. Have you not read? Don't you know? Haven't you read the Old Testament scriptures that he who created them, God who made them, if God created us and God designed marriage and God created marriage, then only God is the one who can define it. The Creator is the only one that can define truly his creation. Listen, no court of law, no government, no society is able to change or redefine what God has established. God created it. Only God can define it. It's kind of like if I go into a museum and I am looking around and I come up to, this is a very famous piece of abstract art. Now, if I were to say to you this morning, what does that art mean to you? Some of you, like me, might say, I have no idea. It doesn't mean a single thing. I have no idea what the artist's intentions were, but I know that people with a little more culture than I am will stand there for hours and look at that painting, and they will come up with all sorts of meanings and all sorts of ideas, and they will say, well, this is what this piece says to me, and this is how I interpret the colors and the shapes and all of those things, and they have all these sort of different interpretations, and they all have their ideas and their opinions, but the truth is this, the only opinion that really matters is the person who created it. He's the only one that can tell you, or she is the only one that can tell you what that painting actually means, what message they're trying to get across. Because it came out of their mind. It came out of their heart. It was their own. They put that into it. Nobody else can define it. That's the way it is when it comes to marriage. God created it, so only God can define it. He's the only one that's able to do that. See, marriage is more about God than it is about us. Marriage is God's plan, not my plan. Marriage reflects God's image, not our personal happiness. This permanent bond, which we'll look at in just a second, between man and woman was God's original design. That's how he defined it. God created it. It is divinely appointed. Secondly, it is a physical union. Marriage is a physical union. Jesus said that for this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and shall cleave to his wife, and they twain shall be what? One flesh. It's that two coming together as one. These two were part of separate families, but they leave those families. They leave that behind and they cleave to each other. And these two that were separate are now, God brings them together, and now they're one flesh, one entity. I learned a little while ago a good illustration of this physical union. I don't know, did you see the pictures in the last couple of weeks of the, I'll put it up there, it's a really ugly fish. It's the angler fish. Did you see that? It was on the news a little while ago, that these are normally only seen at like the depths of the sea, in the deepest, darkest parts of the sea. Nobody ever really sees them. But one of them, for some reason, had come up to the surface. And you might think that's a big fish, but I think it's like that big. They're really small fish. But these are, you've heard of angler fish before, right? These are the ones that have the little light on top of their head and they trap fish. Anyways, so one of these was actually seen close to the surface. I won't keep that picture up there long. I know it's really ugly. I'm sorry. But it's better than looking at me. So anyways, the thing about these angler fish, they're pretty amazing, is that when they mate, when a male and female anglerfish mate, they literally become one fish. They become one flesh. The male's head, the male will attach himself to the female and press his body into the female, and his head literally melts into the body of the female anglerfish. to the point that if you were to separate, well, you really couldn't separate them, but if you did separate them, the male would die. That after a while, they've melded themselves together, their bodies fused together to the point where they share tissue and a circulation of blood, and they actually become one flesh. Of course, that's not literally what marriage is. But the idea, the illustration there is the same, that God has taken two and he puts them together as one flesh. They are one. That's how God designed it to be. There's an abandoning of the old relationship, the starting of a new, and these two that were separate are now one. And God says, listen, what I have put together, don't let man tear asunder. If I put this together and you're one flesh, don't tear it apart. I've designed it to be that way. So God ordained it. Not only is it divinely appointed, not only is it a physical union, but also it must be, if God says don't let man tear it asunder, then it must also be a permanent union. It's designed to last. If two become one flesh, then it must be a permanent union. So how does God define marriage? God defines it this way. Remember, he's the only one that can define it. It is one man and one woman together for life. That's how God designed marriage, committed to each other. So they're asking this question about divorce, and Jesus says, wait a minute. Before we get to that, I need you to understand what marriage actually is. You need to understand that you're thinking about divorce for any reason, for any cause. That's not how God designed marriage. His intended purpose for marriage is that it would not be broken apart. You're thinking about this all wrong. You're thinking about separation. God's thinking about permanence, about continuing. By the way, that's exactly how the world looks at it, isn't it? Yes, marriage is great for some. It has certain benefits to it, but if it doesn't work out, then it doesn't work out. Divorce is not only an option in this society, often it's the first option. If it doesn't work out, then that's okay. And what Jesus is teaching is this: a true marriage relationship is one that will continue in spite of the difficulties. It is a relationship of giving, not getting. Marriage, as God intended it, is unconditionally giving ourselves to each other, looking for ways of meeting the other's needs, seeking our spouse's happiness and their needs above our own. When this is done properly, this is a beautiful union. It's a picture of Christ's love for the church. Marriage, the way that God designed it, works. So there's characteristics of marriage. I want you to see, secondly, the reasons for marriage. Why did God establish this union? A couple reasons, I think, first of all, is companionship. Right? Do you remember God looked at Adam after he had created him and all of the things around him, and he said, it is not good for man, what? To be alone. He looked at him, there was nobody like him. And he says, you know what? It's not good for man to be alone. So God made him a help that was meet for him, a companion that was good for him, one who was equal to him, with whom he could find fulfillment. Proverbs 18, verse 22 says, whoso finds a wife finds a good thing and receives favor from the Lord. Part of the favor that we receive is the goodness of God in giving us someone that is for companionship. Someone who fulfills us and meets our needs and we meet their needs. And there's this mutual companionship in marriage. That's a good thing. So there's companionship, there's procreation. The command was literally be fruitful and multiply. You know, I know this is as basic as it comes, but marriage makes possible the continuation of the race. I say that's basic, but there's a lot of people that don't understand that in today's society. If you look at some of the statistics in the world, some that I looked at now, the the birth rates in the Western world, specifically and in Europe and some of these nations, the developing nations, not only is the birth rate dropping, but it's actually falling off a cliff. It's not sustainable. This idea of procreation and childbearing is something that we see an attack on in a major way today. Not just through same-sex marriage, but also even the desire to have children is under attack. There's a selflessness that comes through having children. Outside of the marriage, these kind of relationships are destructive, but inside the loving commitment of marriage, it is good and it is honorable. So companionship, procreation, that's why Paul tells us in 1 Corinthians 7, verses 1 through 6, that marriage is one way to avoid sexual sins. God's design, done in God's way, understanding God's purpose, leads to the fulfillment that we need. That's why God gave us marriage. Let me say this as well. God's design for marriage has never changed. I'll often hear an argument from people that goes like this. They'll say, you know, the Old Testament talks about God's design for marriage and who we should marry, that it's one man for one woman, but Jesus never really talks about that. Jesus affirms love as we see it in today's society. You know, if there was any place for him to do that, it would have been here. But he doesn't. He reaffirms God's design for marriage, that it has never changed. It is exactly how God intended it. One man and one woman for life. Jesus affirms that here in this passage. And we might look at this ideal description of marriage, and we might say, well, that seems impossible in this broken world. Yes, that's the ideal, but just this or that, it's just not possible in this world. And the truth is this, it is impossible except for one point, that the God who established it gives the strength and courage to complete it, to do it. Those who receive the love of God in a personal relationship with him can extend that love in relationship with each other. God makes it possible to do this. So let me say this just before we move on, that divorce is not an option. Marriage, we don't come into marriage looking at divorce as an option. Marriage is a couple committing themselves to each other for life. They're in it for the long haul, no matter what comes. I remember when Amanda and I were first engaged, that we came to that saying from the very beginning that divorce is not an option. It's not even something that we're going to say. It's not the last option. It's not an option. We're not going to do it. We're totally committed to each other. As we say in our vows, till death do us part. We're in it for the long haul. Through the difficulties, through the hardships, through the good times, we're just in it together. But with that being said, let me also say this, and this might seem contradictory at first, but divorce is not an option, but there are times where it is an exception. And so I want you to see, thirdly, the exception clause. This is what Jesus gives here in verse number 8. Let's start in verse 7. They say unto him, why did Moses then command to give a writing of divorcement and to put her away? He saith unto them, Moses, because of the hardness of your hearts, suffered you to put away your wives, but from the beginning it was not so. And I say unto you, whosoever shall put away his wife, except it be for fornication, and shall marry another, committeth adultery, and whoso marrieth her which is put away doth commit adultery. Do this. Turn with me really quick to Deuteronomy chapter 24. I want you to actually see this bill of divorcement, this exception that Moses gives in Deuteronomy chapter 24. Because as Jesus is saying this, he's giving his definition for marriage. The Pharisees are confused. The disciples are confused. Not only did Jesus not answer their question, but what he said was so far past their thinking. If they're thinking to themselves, if marriage is meant to be permanent, then why did Moses give this exception? Deuteronomy 24. And so let's read it together, starting in verse 1. He says, "When a man had taken a wife and married her, and it come to pass that she find no favor in his eyes." Remember that? That's the sentence that both schools of thought argued over, this idea of favor. So if she finds no favor in his eyes because he hath found some uncleanness in her, then let him write her a bill of divorcement and give it in her hand and send her out of his house. And when she is departed out of his house, she may go and be another man's wife. And if the latter husband hate her and write her a bill of divorcement and giveth it in her hand and sendeth her out of his house, or if the latter husband die, which took her to be his wife, her former husband, the first husband, which sent her away, may not take her again to be his wife. After that she is defiled, for that is an abomination before the Lord. And thou shalt not cause the land to sin, which the Lord thy God giveth thee for an inheritance. You can see there, with the way that that was written, that there would be some confusion, some different interpretations as to how it all worked. It all kind of goes around that word favor and the word uncleanness. If a man has found uncleanness in his wife, what does that mean? The word uncleanness itself has the idea of nakedness or uncovering. And Jesus, I think he emphasizes this back in Matthew 19 by using the word adultery in verse 9. But notice just a couple things about this bill of divorcement. First of all, Moses didn't command it, but he allowed for it. There's a big difference there. It's not something that Moses commanded, but he gave allowance for. In fact, Jesus says, and we'll look at this in just a minute, that this was put in place because of the hardness of their hearts. In other words, this was not God's intention. That's not the way it was from the beginning. It's not being commanded, it's being allowed for. And in fact, this clause was put in place to protect the woman. Moses said that a wife could not return to her first husband after being remarried and divorced. It was protecting her. It would make the husband think twice before signing this bill of divorce. It was a binding bill. It would have taken time to find a scribe to write out this bill of divorce, and maybe in that time they could be reconciled, but it was put in place to protect the woman. And this divorce, this bill of divorce in Deuteronomy 24, permitted the woman to marry again. And the second marriage was not adulterous. The second man that she marries is called a husband, not an adulterer. And so the idea here is this: man can't break God's union, but God can, and God allows for it in certain situations. So go back to Matthew 19. Again, in verse number 8, why did Moses permit this bill of divorce? He says in verse 8, Moses did this because of the hardness of your hearts suffered you to put away your wives. The hardness of your heart. Let me speak just for a minute to this idea of a hardened heart. So often we see this hardened heart in relationships, in marriages, this heart that is hardened towards each other. A hardened heart resists God's will for that individual and for the marriage. A hardened heart desires my own way and sins against God's way. And so sin enters into the relationship and defiles that marriage bond. We need to guard against a hardened heart. A person with a hard heart in a marriage relationship, one with a hard heart will refuse to open themselves up to their spouse. If true love is commitment, then a hardened heart is rejection. There are all sorts of things that can cause this sort of rejection in marriage. Age, changing in looks and ideas. It could be something devastating, like an accident or something like that, but it caused this hardened heart in this. It's possible even in the late stages of life to harden our hearts against the one that we used to be so committed to. The spiritual and emotional and relational openness that was there is not there anymore, and our hearts are hardened towards each other. A hardened heart is one that is unable to receive or extend forgiveness. A hardened heart kind of withdraws into its own little world and rationalizes sinful behaviors and attitudes and actions, casting blame on everybody else, living in bitterness. This heart refuses to repent and accept God's forgiveness and doesn't extend forgiveness to the spouse. I think we often see this kind of hardened heart when one spouse has constantly been hurt by another spouse, by their spouse. They've been hurt so many times that they begin to harden their heart towards that person. Instead of forgiving 70 times 7, right, that we just learned about in chapter 18, they cut off forgiveness and they refuse to forgive. They become bitter and resentful and harden their hearts so that they won't be hurt again. It cuts off restoration, leading to isolation, maybe even seeking companionship in other places. And we need to be careful for this hardened heart in our marriage relationships. Listen, God weeps over this kind of relationship. This is not what God designed. This is not what God desired in a marriage relationship. This is not the outcome that we look for. But to keep the hardened heart from destroying the other, divorce is permitted in this occasion. So what was the exception? Remember, the Pharisees come to Jesus and they say, can a man divorce his wife for any reason, for any cause? And Jesus says, no, that's not how God intended it. But he says in verse number 9, whosoever shall put away his wife, except it be for fornication, and shall marry another, committeth adultery. So is there an acceptable reason for divorce? Remember, this is not a command to separate. God desires that we fulfill the restoration and reconciliation of chapter number 18. But when that can't happen, Jesus allows divorce as an acceptable exception because some destructive sin has entered into the relationship and destroyed the union that God has established. Divorce is meant to protect the non-offending spouse. So Jesus gives us here this exception, which is adultery. Without getting into too much detail, the word that is used here, the Greek word, is the word porneia, which we get pornography from in our English language, and it speaks to any sort of unfaithfulness within the marriage relationship. Any sexual activity outside the clearly biblically defined boundaries of marriage. We've been called to holiness, and this kind of behavior damages and destroys marriages. And so Jesus gives this exception. Now you may look also at 1 Corinthians chapter 7, where it seems like there is also one other exception, and that would be abandonment by a non-believing spouse. And you can look at that there, where Paul is speaking about the marriage relationship and specifically that between a believing spouse and an unbelieving one. And he says this in 1 Corinthians 7, but if the unbelieving depart, that's that idea of abandonment, then let him depart. A brother or sister is not under bondage in such cases, but God has called us to peace. Think of it this way. Divorce, as Jesus mentions it here in the New Testament, is the equivalent to a spouse's death in the old. It permits the innocent party the freedom to separate and remarry without sin. And some would say, well, that weakens the marriage covenant. But I think in reality, it's the opposite. It shows us just how seriously God takes marriage. That this adultery, this immorality, this abandonment is so serious in the marriage relationship. It's such an affront to the establishment of marriage and how God designed it that he allows this exception. Now, it's kind of funny to see the disciples' response to this teaching of Jesus. In verse number 10, his disciples saying to him, if the case of the man be so with his wife, if what you're saying is really that difficult and there's really no exceptions other than adultery, then this is their conclusion. It is not good to marry. If you're that serious about marriage and you're really not allowing divorce for any reason, for any cause, except for adultery, then it'd be better off for us not to marry. They see the seriousness and the permanence of marriage and say, maybe it's better for us just not to get married then. Marriage is hard. And the answer to that is yes. Marriage is hard. Anyone that's been married for any amount of time understands that marriage is not always easy. Right? There's difficult things about marriage, and Jesus says, you're right. It's not for everybody. There are some that can't handle this. There are some that cannot take this. He says in verse 12 that there are some for physical reasons who are unmarried, who are eunuchs. There are some for spiritual reasons that remain single. Paul talks about that as well in 1 Corinthians chapter 7. There's different reasons why some would remain single. Listen, there are some that are called to this life of singleness. It doesn't make them more of a Christian or less of a Christian. It's just a calling that God has on them. It's what he's called them to. By the way, I think sometimes we see marriage as a sign of maturity. And those that are married tend to get the more responsible positions in the church, especially those that are young and unmarried. Single people are often referred to as those who just haven't settled down yet. But that there are actually people that have been called to that. I think maybe we need to rethink how we look at those that God has called to a life of singleness. We won't get into all that, but Jesus says there are some that can't take this, and they will live this life of singleness. Now, we're out of time again. I tend to do that fairly quickly on Sundays. Let me give you just a few quick thoughts, and we'll be finished. Number one, I think when we look at this passage, all of these things that I read and study simply reaffirm God's design and his desire for marriage. I think the world treats it lightly. We may treat it lightly at times, but God takes it very seriously. Many people today make this statement. Maybe they won't say it, but this is the thought. For better or for worse, but just not for very long. That's the way the world looks at it. But God says, no, listen, the marriage union is a serious covenant, and nobody or nothing should separate it. It is a lifelong bond that reflects deep commitment and unity between the husband and the wife, built on love and respect and strengthened by God and approached with faithfulness and selflessness. It's a picture of God's love for the church. God takes this matter very seriously. And so should we. Let me say this also. Secondly, just thinking this way, if someone is divorced, even if it's in an unbiblical way, or they're remarried, we have to remind ourselves sometimes that it's not the unpardonable sin. Right, it's been treated like that at times. There are times that some are ostracized and cut off who have struggled with this, but the reality of this is not the end of a Christian walk. There is forgiveness and mercy for those that have sinned, just like every other sin. God's mercy and his cleansing. Now, there may be some hindrances moving forward, but God's mercy and God's forgiveness are abundant. No matter where we are in this. Let me say this in closing, that happy marriages are not an accident. They are a result of commitment and love and mutual understanding and sacrifice and hard work. The disciples said, it is good not to marry. And I say, it is good to marry, but it's a lot of work. And any of us that have been married for any amount of time know that that's true. It's not easy. There are challenges. It's a life of giving and selflessness to each other. If a husband and wife are fulfilling their marriage vows, they will enjoy, if they're holding to God's word and his design for marriage, then they will enjoy a growing relationship that will satisfy them and keep them true to each other for all time. And so in our I know I'm speaking specifically to the married ones this morning. There's something there for all of us. But if we desire to have that kind of relationship, then we need to put the effort in, work in, to be faithful to what God's called us to do, to love our spouse as a picture of how Christ loved the church.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. My prayer is that God would use the preaching of His Word in your life in a special way. If there's any way that we can be a help to you, please feel free to reach out at bibcinfo@gmail.com. Or if you're in the area, you're always welcome to come join us in worshiping the Lord together every Sunday morning at 10 o'clock and Wednesday at 6:30. May the Lord bless you today.